But before I start, I would like to give a shout out to Baldwin Chin, and thanks for our work together in this and related topics in the past. And also significantly to the professional staff at the Court of Criminal Appeals, the past and current Michaels, Michael S. and Michael F. I don't know that we always appreciate how incredibly fortunate we are to be practicing in Texas before a court where the staff makes itself so incredibly available to see that we can do our very best work. Regardless of whether we're representing an applicant, who I will call the defendant for purposes of this presentation because it's just easier, or representing the state of Texas. So thanks to the staff at the court for making our life better than it could be. For my money, habeas advocacy is the best, most fun area of criminal practice, period, hands down. It's the best blend of trial skills like investigation and questioning of witnesses, and the best blend of appellate skills, your research, your drafting, your adherence to deadlines and commitments. So I think it's fantastic. Unlike direct appeal, for example, let's say where the mess has already been made and the facts are already etched in stone. On a writ, we have a tremendous opportunity to help develop facts that were outside the original record, the original trial record. And facts are the make or break component in any particular case. Facts are what is going to make a writ work or not work. And our fact findings, our proposed fact findings, are the vehicle that we use to make sure that those facts get the attention they deserve from courts at every single level. So consider, for example, we have a claim of ineffective assistance for failing to call a specific witness. Would that be an automatic grant of relief on habeas? No, of course not. We know that. Each side in a case like that would have to highlight why not calling a specific witness harmed or didn't harm the outcome in a particular case, the demonstration of privacy that Michael was talking about earlier today. So facts are necessary, and rich facts are necessary in order to provide the context for our claim of constitutional harm in a particular case. I like to think that the court is well familiar with the applicable law. I don't need to educate or attempt to educate the court on the doctrine of ineffective assistance of counsel. What I need to show is how omissions by a trial lawyer impacted the outcome in this case. The court doesn't need my view of the law, of Sixth Amendment right to counsel and ineffective assistance of counsel. They need the facts to support it. So why bother filing findings of fact or drafting findings of fact at all? And I suggest that the answer to that is consideration of who you're drafting them for. There are three, in my view, three potential target audiences for your fact findings. In the short term, that's the trial court. Obviously, as the advocate, whether for the state or defense, you're attempting to persuade the habeas judge to adopt your proposed findings as her own, and then either recommending or denying relief, depending on the side you're arguing. In the mid-range, these same proposed findings of fact will go up to the Court of Criminal Appeals. At this level now, you're attempting to persuade the high court to overturn the trial court's adverse findings and adopt your proposed findings. Remember, as Michael pointed out earlier today, the Court of Criminal Appeals isn't bound by the fact findings made below. So this gives you, as the advocate, a second chance to advance your position. And the third, longer term strategic reason for drafting findings of fact yourself is its potential impact in federal court. if the writ is going to be taken into the federal system under Section 2254. Now in federal court, you are illustrating why the findings in the state court were incorrect and why different findings can be made. So you're attempting to overcome that presumption of correctness. Three different audiences, all considering the same proposed fact findings. There are some initial considerations I'd like just to clarify before we go too far in depth, and that is the differences between a writ under Article 1107 and 1107-2. I know that both Michael and Carmen touched on these. I'd like to go a little bit deeper. The first big difference is the identity of the fact finder. In an 1107 felony writ, the judge is considered the original fact finder, and if her facts are supported by the record, her findings are going to be accorded great deference by the Court of Criminal Appeals. But that deference isn't a rubber stamp. It's not a guarantee that those findings will be upheld once the case is in the Court of Criminal Appeals. Because remember, the writ belongs to the Court of Criminal Appeals. And the court has rejected, even as recently as in the last 2 years, fact findings